Welcome, everyone, to episode 62 of the Way of Improvement Leads Home podcast. We are coming to you live, although you're not listening to us live, from the campus of Messiah College here in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. As always, Casey Lehman, studio producer, is behind the glass, and I am your host, John Fia. Now, anyone who listens to the Way of Improvement Leads Home podcast over the years has recognized the voice that you normally hear at the beginning of our episode. And of course, you all know that voice as the voice of Drew Durley Hermeling. For years now, he has been my partner in crime here since we started this podcast back in 2015. But today, I'm sad to say that sometimes partnerships must come to an end. And I am officially announcing that Drew has decided to leave the Way of Improvement Leads Home podcast. And he's leaving for much, 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 much greener pastures. And he'll talk about that in a second. But before Drew goes, I thought we would make a special episode here to celebrate his time with us, an episode where we can reflect back on our partnership together and maybe learn a little bit more about Drew's next steps. I know some of you are fans of Drew Durley Hermeling, and a couple of you have even asked me, like, where has his voice been on the last couple of podcasts? I am happy to say, at least, that Drew is actually back in the studio today. If you've noticed in the last couple of episodes, indeed, because of his time commitments and some of his life changes, he has been producing these episodes from behind the scenes. But today, he is here. It is a snowy Saturday morning in January in Mechanicsburg, but Drew drove an hour to get here from his new house in Lancaster, or his new location in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Do I say, Drew, welcome to the show, or good to have you back?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yes, it is very good to be back. You know, this is going to be, I think, for all of us, a very bittersweet episode, but I'm excited to know that the podcast is continuing as I depart in the capable hands of our new producer, Casey. You're going to continue this work. I think it's very important. And part of the reason why I wanted to try to hold on for this last 6 months, but unfortunately, it just seems like for the good of the podcast and the quality of the podcast, it makes the most sense for me to tip my cap and step aside.
Yeah, we'll talk about a little bit about that here in a second and how we're going to kind of be moving into the post-Drew era of the podcast. But tell us a little bit. You have not really been on the air since, I think, last season, right? I mean, you weren't on the air at all in the fall. We heard your voice on the opening and on the closing credits. But what have you been up to, Drew?
Yeah, as people probably remember, the first two episodes of the season, I tried to participate remotely, and it just, the technology and the quality wasn't there. It wasn't working. And we'd gotten so used to the chemistry of being in studio together that stepping back into kind of our first season mode of recording remotely just didn't make any sense anymore. That's really when I realized I couldn't get here physically for the studio time, and, you know, the approach just wasn't going to make sense for what we'd been doing.
Yeah, and those were some hard conversations, I think, that we had, you know, about how to move forward. And, you know, I appreciated Drew's honesty through the whole thing and his commitment to keeping this a good podcast. So what has taken up all your time, Drew, that you can no longer produce the Way of Improvement Leads Home podcast? What are these greener pastures, so to speak?
Well, those who remember know I've been working at Messiah and working as the project manager of the Digital Harrisburg Initiative all last year here on campus. And I'd been commuting from Lancaster. I'd recently moved to Lancaster because of my wife's job. I'd been commuting 3 days a week. You know, it's a pretty hefty commute, you know, hour and a half each way. And so in April of last year, I saw a job posting for a high school teaching job at a unique and pretty innovative private high school in Lancaster City, actually just 5 blocks from my house. And so I applied. At this point, I can say I wasn't terribly sure if that was the right fit. You know, I'd been working hard for many, many years, as any grad student knows, working hard to get that elusive higher ed position. Anyone who's been following John's work obviously knows he's often covering the status of the landscape of higher ed and history, especially in academia right now. And I kind of had this realization. I went to my job interview there at Stone, and it was really a remarkable experience. They really demonstrated that I could continue to do the kind of thoughtful, historical thinking that was so important to me which is often unfortunately lacking in many high school classrooms. I mean, obviously not all. Many of our listeners do work very hard as high school teachers to promote real historical thinking in high school classrooms. But in my interview, it was very clear that they wanted a historian on their faculty. They didn't just want someone to just teach some classes out of a textbook. And in fact, it's a school that has disavowed textbooks altogether.
This is a unique place, right? You just mentioned they don't have textbooks. I know you've mentioned the Stone School in a couple of episodes, but refresh our memory. Give us a little pitch for this place, because it does sound like a very, very unique place. One of my social media feeds, I saw a nice little video for it. Drew's in the video, and it really looks like an exciting opportunity, the way the school is structured and their philosophy of education and so forth.
Right. The specific model that we use is known as problem-based learning. So instead of teaching content, which is, you know, the approach of most schools where you say, these are the things that you need to learn by the end of the semester, and we will give you a number of examinations or other sorts of assessments, whether that be a paper or something like that, to demonstrate that you've learned these things. We are very, as an institution, very intentionally non-content focused, and instead focused on the sorts of skills and the tools students need to solve any kind of problem that is put in front of them. As a historian, I think that's really liberating, because I think anyone who has tried to construct a survey, you know, we both this fall taught the first half of the American History Survey, knows getting through what you are supposed to cover is a big challenge. And I'm liberated from that. I don't have to worry about what I have to get through. But instead, I'm focused on presenting very specific problems to my students, historical problems, and then letting them figure it out on their own. And so, you know, if I have a student, and I do have a student who is very, very interested in reform movements. And so if she wants to spend all of her time working on reform movements, that's great.
Yeah.
I have another student who's very, very focused on women's history. And if she wants to spend all of her time on women's history, that's also great. And I don't have to worry about that. But instead, I get to focus, and this really gets to a lot of things you talk about. And, you know, I'm thinking back to both of our episodes with Sam Weinberg, you know, the tools of the historian. My classroom is very focused on the five C's of historical thinking that you talk about a lot. And as long as they're doing that, then we're on the right track. It works well because my class sizes are very small, so I get to spend a lot of time interfacing directly with students, guiding them, reviewing their work.
So you have a student who loves reform movement, she can work on reform movement. You have a student who loves women's history, she can work on women's history. What does that look like in reality? You know, when you say that, I'm thinking sort of, well, they're over in a corner studying the abolitionists, right? I mean, what does that look like in your everyday classroom?
Well, technology makes life a lot easier. One of the things that there have been a number of digital humanities projects in which curated primary source material has been put together and is now available online. So for example, in my last American history class, I had all the students spending time in a curated collection of primary source documents all about contact, you know, the Columbian Exchange. And so they could write any paper they wanted. Their job was to spend time in that primary source collection and then eventually come to me with a thesis. And then we work together using, again, because of technology, every student has to have a device at all times. You know, so we're on tools like Google Scholar, just searching through secondary sources to then write that thesis. They come to me and we go through these stages where they present a tentative thesis. And then we sit around and we talk about it as a group. And then I say, okay, now your step is to find secondary sources that help you either defend that thesis or maybe challenge that thesis. And then you have to work that together. I think we get a bad rap sometimes as an institution. People think, oh, you guys don't really do work. Kids doing whatever they want all day. Yeah. And that's not true at all. We have a lot of very high stakes work. We just think a better demonstration of work is an artifact of your learning rather than an examination.
Do you kind of present material? Do you ever lecture? And I know high school teachers should lecture very much, but do you ever have sort of structured learning where you got maybe a PowerPoint up there, you're trying to walk them through some kind of context, those more traditional kind of teaching?
Yeah, and I think the thing that many quote-unquote traditional teachers would recognize is we do spend a lot of time in a kind of seminar discussion.
Yeah.
Something I've started doing, but actually both in the college classes I've continued to teach here at Messiah and at Stone, is I have them keep a commonplace book as they read, right? And so they go home, they get reading assignments just like any other student, and they go home and they read, and they need to write things down and curate what they are reading so that when they come back to class the next day, we can have a very productive discussion. Right. And then I can also kind of check in and make sure they're doing the work, right?
Yeah.
That's been a tool that's been very successful in my classroom.
That sounds incredible. Do they have any other openings in history? I'm happy here at Messiah, but it sounds like a great opportunity.
Yeah, I was saying this before, but for someone who was becoming incredibly anxious about the lack of opportunities for higher ed and graduates with PhDs. I'm not done with my PhD yet. I'm still in the dissertation writing phase, but it's become very clear that this is not just a job that I'm doing in the meantime. And that's what I've been doing for so many years.
Right.
And it's kind of gets to how hard this process of leaving the podcast has been, is the podcast in some ways was the side hustle that, you know, I was doing while I was also doing all these other things. But now that I've landed in a place that's just very vocationally satisfying,
right,
understanding where my bandwidth is and what I can take on and what I can continue to do on the side, really, I had to make some very tough decisions because I'm incredibly happy right now with where I've landed.
Well, it sounds like decisions that a lot of doctoral students, especially in history and the humanities, are having to make right now. So it's exciting. I'm happy for you that you've landed on your feet in this way. Believe it or not, Drew, we've been doing this now for 4 years.
Yeah.
I went back and looked. Our first episode was in December. The famous episode zero was in December of 2015. I remember it really well. We were not in this really nice studio here in the High Center. We were over at the college radio station. We were just kind of flying by the seat of our pants, and it was kind of exciting those times. We were trying to get something going here. What were some of those early memories that you have? I'll share some too about kind of getting this thing off the ground.
Well, we've often talked about this mythic first meeting at Little Amps Coffee Roasters. We've told this story before, but what we got in the habit of is you being someone who was invested in me as an undergraduate and then was instrumental in writing recommendations and things for me when I got into grad school. We continue to meet occasionally for coffee and just kind of update. And
a couple times a year, once a year. Yeah.
And what we discovered during one of those regular updates is I'd had rattling in the back of my head this thing like, oh, I know how to do audio stuff a little bit. Maybe I should do a podcast. That seems like a thing that cool people do. And you had had simultaneously rattling in the back of your head, well, what's something I can do? You'd done some YouTube videos, your virtual office hours.
Yeah.
And you were thinking, well, this podcast thing. So there's that synergy when we were meeting and we realized we'd both kind of been thinking about something. And I still remember the text I got from you, I think 3 hours after I got home from Little Amps, saying, you know, were you serious? Are we really doing this? And and I was like, yeah, let's do it. And again, I was in this place where I was doing so many weird jobs and I had no idea what I was going to be able to do, you know, where I was going to land as I was making my way through grad school. And so I was like, yeah, we should do this. This would be a great resume booster. You know, you'd had an established kind of public facing history career, long established. And, you know, I knew that that was an opportunity for me as someone who didn't have anything to my name at that point. That was an opportunity for me to kind of advance some of my own academic career. And so we went ahead and got started. I think we were immensely lucky. I still remember, you know, some of our first planning meetings and just making lists of people to try to get on the podcast.
Right.
And just throwing out some, just any name that we could think of that might be of interest to have as guests. And I mean, we really got some people who had no business hanging out with us, you know?
Like, we had Annette Gordon Reed that first year. We had, our first episode was Jim Grossman, the executive director of the AHA.
Yeah, at least my part, I recorded in the basement of my in-law's house because we recorded it over the Christmas break, I remember.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was up in Connecticut. You were back here in Mechanicsburg.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember those Little Amps meetings. You know, it was around that time, right, where kind of history podcasts, they'd been around for a while, but you began to see kind of more kind of academics getting involved in them. I mean, this was when sort of Liz Kovart's podcast was really starting to take off, the Ben Franklin's World. You know, you always had Backstory, which I don't know if you saw, has been defunded. Their last episodes are going to be in July 2020. By the way, Liz Kovart is also taking a 3 or 4 month break. So, like, you know, we may have a nice field here. So, yeah, I was thinking, like, what's the next step for me? I couldn't do it on my own, though. I needed help. I needed someone who was kind of savvy in this kind of world of digital, of podcasting, of kind of the web, whether it was Providence or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you just came along for my career, at least, right at the right time. And I think it was just a really, really kind of mutual fit. I would be remiss, now that we're sort of reflecting here about memories, we also had an intern right? Back in those early days. I still consider her an intern, but some of you go back and listen to some of those early podcasts. How is your daughter Nilsa doing?
She's doing really well. It was funny, a few weeks ago, you know, one of the things as we've been transitioning myself out of the podcast is who is going to be the caretaker of the mugs.
You potential can still get those if you join our Patreon campaign. I now have them. Yeah. You'll get them. Yeah, but the mugs.
You were up at Rockefeller Center in New York doing some media work at NBC, and I just had a day where I could come and drop off the mugs with my family travels over the holiday. I've had a lot of very narrow windows, and so you know we were texting back and forth, and you just leave them on the doorstep.
I think my family was in King of Prussia Mall in Philadelphia shopping that day. Yeah,
just because of my own parenting commitments, I brought Nilsa with me.
I missed her.
And that's what I said. Oh, we're going. This is kind of cute. She only calls you John Fia, all one word. All one word, John Fia. And I said, we're going to John Fia's house. And she started crying when she realized that you weren't actually there. I said, oh, no, we're just dropping this off at his doorstep. But there's his car. She's doing well. We just got her acceptance letter into kindergarten.
Cool.
So she'll be going, starting kindergarten at Lancaster Mennonite in the fall.
Okay.
From one parent to another, I'm sure you realize, you know, as someone who's now very recently empty nesting, seeing those daughters grow up is a little bit bittersweet too.
It goes, you know, you've heard this a million times, but it's so true. It goes quickly. It goes quickly. We had our kids for 3 weeks, both at home, and then they just left again, you know, and you're just kind of like, okay, you know, I say to Joy, you know, what do we do now? You know? Yeah, we're going to have to figure out some kind of situation where you're on campus next or if I'm in Lancaster or something where I could get to say hello to Nilsa.
You're not the only person over in Boyer who has come to like a visit from Nilsa.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I'll still be teaching here one night a week in the spring, that Native American Cultures course.
Oh, okay. So you're staying. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, are you staying connected here with Messiah?
Yeah, and we'll see. I'm going to reevaluate how that looks next year. Again, it's an added stress, and I'm not sure how much I need it, but at the same time, it is a lot of fun to stay connected with college students too, because it's just it's a different opportunity.
Yeah. Well, we've worked together on 60 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I think many people are familiar with our kind of opening banter and kidding and joking around and kind of setting the stage for these episodes. But we've also had some, we just mentioned before, some really great guests. Any kind of favorite episodes that jump out to you as you think about your 4 years of producing here?
Well, I don't know if I would call this a favorite moment as much as like the first kind of oh no moment. I still remember we were talking with Paul Lucas, who was at the time from ESPN.com.
I know where you're going.
He's since left. And it's the first time we upset a guest, I think.
Yeah.
And one of the ways we've planned our seasons is usually two of my pitched guests we get a season, right? You pick most of the guests, but I throw out some guests. And by the time everything shakes down, about two or three of them are people I've picked. He was someone who has curated a very niche blog that I still read obsessively. Someone who's probably not that famous, but for me was kind of...
Big deal. I remember how excited you were when we landed.
And we made him mad by asking him a question. Once we got off the air, he was very, it worked out fine. But that was the first time I was like, oh, I could screw something up here pretty bad.
Go back and listen to that episode.
It's still a good episode.
I can't remember which it was.
We said his tastes were conservative. He said, I don't like that label.
You know, he didn't like any changes to the uniform.
For those who know, he runs a blog on sports uniform aesthetics.
And
the history of sports uniforms.
And I said, would you say your tastes are conservative? And he just, I wouldn't say he blew up.
No.
He clearly was irritated.
Yeah.
Like, who are these guys? I've been nice enough to come on their podcast. And now I got this history professor telling me I'm conservative. That was pretty cool. We've had some really great sports episodes.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things you've pushed me to do is, you know, I'm a sports fan too, obviously, but a lot of the sports episodes have been, I mean, some of them, like Amy Bass or Bruce Berglund, I knew them, but you really pushed to kind of make sure we do that. I'm trying to remember the La Vida baseball guy.
Adrian Burgos.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun because that's a guy, he's a professor at University of Illinois in the history department. He's a historian, but he's made this wonderful side career of interviewing Latin baseball players and really trying to change the way we think of the history of baseball. You know, his big thing is it's America's with the apostrophe after the S pastime because we sometimes think of this as, you know, a traditionally white sport, and then we have Jackie Robinson who breaks the color barrier, and then, you know, Roberto Clemente and something that was traditionally American white, you know, quote-unquote white, that then becomes more diverse. But as he points out, actually – baseball has been huge in Latin America the whole time. Yeah. And if you change the way you look at that history, the story of integration looks a lot different.
Am I right to suggest that until earlier this season, we had only done one episode where we were in two different places trying to interview somebody? And I think that was the first Sam Weinberg episode, right? We've talked about this in other episodes before, where I was at Mount Vernon and you were, I don't know where you were, your home or something. And, you know, I was in the bathroom of my residence quarters room at the Mount Vernon Scholars House, and it was echoing, and I'm, like, sitting next to the toilet on the floor of the bathroom trying to get good sound, listening to Sam Weinberg yell at us for asking dumb questions.
Well, you probably had a very similar experience getting yelled at by Sam Weinberg as I did getting yelled at by Paul Lucas.
That's right.
I mean, there's
That's
another
right.
person you respect. That episode is very memorable to me, too, because it was my first introduction to Sam Weinberg.
Right.
I've become a big fan of his work. But, he, you know, now that we've had two episodes with him on, listeners will know he definitely brings his personality.
Oh, yeah.
He's not a shy guy.
I think he said at one point it was either one of us asked a question. It was kind of like, well, why would you ask that? Or that's a dumb question.
Yeah, he's the only person who's told us our question was dumb. And
right.
We should rephrase
exactly.
It.
Exactly. And then, of course, how can we forget the famous live episode, right, in front of the faculty and community educators. Must have been, what, 200-300 people in the room? I remember just being incredibly anxious about that. You were like a pro in that episode. But, you know, it's one thing to sit here in the studio and sort of riff on different topics and interview different people. But then to go in front of, like, several hundred of your colleagues that you see every day who are required to be at this event.
Yeah.
This was the May Development Week event after classes had ended and after graduation had taken place. And they asked us to do a live podcast on the, I think it was on like the role of the humanities. Or,
yeah, digital work in the humanities.
Digital work in the humanities. And here we are up on this stage in this like very majestic concert hall that we have here in this, actually it's in this building here at Messiah College. And Drew and I are up on the stage and I'm just like, I know no one wants to be here. And I know from personal experience, you sit in the chair there and you're like, okay, what are you going to give me now that's going to hold my attention for the next hour? But you know something? I think that was a home run. I mean, you were phenomenal. You kind of came into your own, I think, in that episode, because from that point forward, it was like, who is this Drew? Like, can we get him to do this? Can Drew? I think partially your performance in that episode is what kind of landed you the job with the Digital Harrisburg.
Yeah.
Because people were saying like, wow, this is, these guys are good.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and Digital Harrisburg was one of the topics, right? One of the guests.
That's right. It
was a panel, for those who haven't heard the episode, it was a panel with three different professors here on campus who do work in the digital space, but who are humanities professors, one being David Pettigrew,
right,
who is the director of the Digital Harrisburg Initiative. And, it was shortly after that that I got the job as the project manager.
And it was also, it was what I loved about that episode, which I was very anxious about at the time, but it was kind of a surprise.
Right.
So no one knew we were going to be hosting a live, no one in the audience knew that we were going to be hosting a live episode of the podcast. And I was out there talking with this woman named Ashley Schaefer. She was interviewing me about what I do with the podcast. And then Ashley Schaefer works in our Agape Center, which is our service learning center. And then like at one point we had planned to just kind of transition and said, I said something like, you know something, Ashley, instead of telling you about the podcast, why don't we just do an episode right here? And then you like emerge from like the side door. The fake Springsteen music at the beginning of the podcast just comes raining into the auditorium. And we're like, welcome to episode. I look back on that now and I just had a ball doing that episode, despite the fact that like you were somewhere else. I was in the back room with Ashley and a few others just sweating, like thinking like, oh my gosh, I hope this works or else I'm going to fall flat on my face. And I think at least from, locally here in the Messiah College community, I think it was that episode, now people come up to me on campus who don't know me really well or don't know my blog or my work as a historian. And they're like, oh, man, I loved your podcast. Now I'm listening to your podcast.
Yeah, that was a very different experience because, obviously we record and we try to keep things light and conversational, but that you peer behind the curtain. The listener doesn't hear everything we say in the studio. We did do some editing of that episode as well, but there were 200, 300 people who got to hear the unedited version, right?
And people, so, I loved that, like, you know, I was trying to get the audience to clap. People were clapping, and, you know, it was just phenomenal. It's just a great moment, I think, for our brand here, if you will, here at the podcast. So, Drew, this will be your last appearance on the podcast, although, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, we may have you have a guest and talk more about your stuff at the Stone School or whatever.
Or when my super awesome book comes out, you can have me on as a guest.
First of all, this is your last appearance kind of in any official capacity as an employee of the podcast, right?
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. Our kind of our partnership, at least for now, it sort of ends here. But we have a lot of listeners out there, right? And they have come to rely on, whether they realize it or not, a lot of the things that you do behind the scenes. And you mentioned a little bit about this at the beginning of the podcast. Help our listeners out there to know that despite the fact that you are leaving, we are still in good hands. You know, maybe introduce us to some of the transitions that are going to happen here as you step down. Probably this is something I should do, but as long as I have you here, you're the one who's kind of orchestrated your own exit plan. So maybe I'll let you speak to that.
Those who don't know exactly kind of what I've always been doing is I've kind of existed as that center of the Venn diagram. But
yeah, this thing doesn't go without you. So we've had to make some changes.
Yeah, I'm the center there of between the technical side, the recording, posting on the internet, you know, making sure all that is maintained. And then the history side, the content side, you know, as a trained historian, you know, we've been able to work together. Obviously, that's going to change. I think it's going to move forward in still very profound ways, but there'll be a little bit less on-air collaboration, obviously, between you and someone else on the team.
Right.
Casey's staying on. She's done awesome work. One of the things, you've heard me a lot less on the podcast, but part of what I've been doing in the meantime is training Casey on how to do a lot of the technical things that I'd been doing. You know, the way our workflow previously had been was our studio producer would take care of all the audio and then just send it to me, and I would make sure, clean it up, put in the music, and then do your feeds. And so I was in charge of that work while also maintaining our Patreon base. You're going, John, going to take over some of that Patreon management, some of the writing I had been doing, episode descriptions, things like that, while Casey is going to be taking over posting the episode, stuff like that. I'm very confident in both of your abilities to do those two things, but it is going to be a little bit different. Longtime listeners have already seen the ways in which the format and sequencing of the episodes has been changing a little bit. You've been jumping right into your audio essays, because we're not going to have the banter sections that we've had in the past. But everything I've heard, although I actually don't know who the guest lineup is, and you like to keep that close to the vest anyways, but you've already got guests lined up for the spring. So in that regard, and I know a lot of the meat of all of our episodes are really fascinating conversations between you and a guest. That's going to remain exactly the same.
Just bear with us, folks. Casey is phenomenal. She'll be with us through May, and then I'm hoping she's going to find somebody to replace her. We're still working on that. I think we're going to move forward, you know, give us some grace in terms of any kind of hiccups or so forth that we might have. Remember, folks, we are still out there and we can still use your support. We still have our Patreon page up and running, the Way of Improvement Leads Home podcast. Please consider going on to that page and supporting us with a small donation or a pledge. We still have signed books. We still have our mugs. We still have all the gifts for those who contribute to the podcast. Tell your friends, share favorite episodes on Twitter and on Facebook. Continue to just go back and listen to some of our past episodes. We now have a nice body of work for newcomers. Try to, you know, get caught up and so forth. But we are going strong. We are going to miss Drew, but we are still going strong here as we push through this season. As Drew just said, we have some great guests lined up.
I'm really excited just to become a listener, you know, and the episode still appears every 2 weeks in my feed. So now I get to just sit back and enjoy, maybe be a little less stressed about whether it posted correctly or not.
And we can use Drew's massive networks too. Hopefully you're still going to share our podcasts with your friends like you've been doing for so long. Are we still using Overholt?
I've passed on the MP3s.
Some of the transition music is Drew's former band. Drew will continue to have an imprint here upon the Way of Improvement Leads Home. You don't really get many opportunities after a student graduates to then come back and work with a student. Drew was my student, as some of you know, 2002 to 2006.
Yep.
Does that sound right?
Totally right.
And then we, you know, we stayed in touch. Drew stayed in the area. We reconnected to work on this podcast. Man, if you get a chance to work with a former student, take it. You know, this has just been a phenomenal experience for me. It has been so great getting to know Drew and his young family. Again, it's not often that a professor gets an opportunity like this to develop a friendship in this way with a former student, what, 10, 15 years after that student graduates. So Drew, it has been an honor. It has been a pleasure really to work beside you. I'll always see you as my partner in crime here. This is not no longer a professor-student relationship. These are colleagues working together to bring great history podcasting to the general public. So, you know, from the depths of my heart, thank you for helping me at least navigate this new phase of my career and my life. It's been wonderful.
Well, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity.
For all of you who are listening, how can they get a hold of you, Drew? Your Twitter handle is...
You know, it's been a very difficult place in this political season. A little bit less on Twitter, but I'm still there, ddurleyhermeling.
Send me an email and I'll pass it along. You know, if you have some kind words for Drew, hit me up on Facebook or whatever and I'll pass it along.
You can go to stoneindependent.org.
Okay. Now, I know a lot of you have developed a virtual relationship with Drew. You've enjoyed our exchanges back and forth and you've enjoyed getting to know him over these last 4 years. So we'd really appreciate it. I think he would too, if you could just kind of send a note thanking him for all his hard work here at The Way of Improvement Leads Home. Thanks again for listening to this special episode of the podcast. Until we meet again, may your way of improvement always lead home. Drew, take us out one last time.
This has been a production of The Way of Improvement Leads Home, a blog dedicated to reflections at the intersection of American history, religion, politics, and academic life. Visit us at thewayofimprovement.com. The Way of Improvement Leads Home is a member of the Recorded History Podcast Network. Check out the other podcasts on the network by heading over to recordedhistory.net. If you want to support our efforts, please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice so others may more easily find this podcast. And let's continue the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us at TWOILH Podcast. The podcast was brought to you through the generous support of Gretchen Adams, Richard Green, Margaret Graves, Kate Logan, Lisa DeGuardi, and Ron Schooler. Also, many thanks to our sponsor, Jennings College Consulting, discovering the right college fit for your future. The podcast was recorded at the High Center Studios in Messiah College. Thanks to Ed Ark for his continued support. Original music is by Overholt. Our studio producer is Casey Lehman. I've been your producer and guest, Drew Durley-Hermeling, and your host is John Fia.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.